What's wrong, Mary?
There. You fool, you whacked all the dust and fingerprints off. Why? Just how proud at all. All the glimmers up. Inspector, this is obviously the work of that sinister criminal, Lo Hing Ting. Let's try this door here. Ah, you, sir. Excuse me. Inspector?
Yes?
This man is Chinese.
How do you know?
You can tell by his eyes.
His eyes?
Yes, didn't you hear the way he pronounced them?
Well, don't worry, Inspector.
I speak the language. All right, then Friday.
And don't forget to starch the collars.
Wait a minute, Mr. Deacon. This man is a murderer.
Lo Hing. Ding.
What?
You'll hang for this, Lo Hang.
You can't get away with this. I'll get you an assurance. Assurance
I'm tied to this panel of gunpowder.
Oh, well, that chauffeur's a boy, huh?
Take him. Look out. He's lighting a fuse. He's going to blow us up.
What? Lo Hing, how long will this fuse take a burn? Tell him, man, quickly. How long?
60 seconds.
Thank heavens for that. And I've just got time.
What for?
For one solid thought.
I never was loved by anyone else, and I can prove it too.
You gave me just one of your kisses, and that was when I knew.
But I never was loved by anyone else, and I can prove it too.
You gave me just one of your kisses, and that was when I knew.
You used your arms to conquer me. That's why I never was loved by anyone else, and I can prove it too.
You gave me just one of your kisses, and that was when I knew.
gave me a sample of love. It thrilled me through and through. Oh, I never was loved by anyone else.
I never was loved by anyone else.
Until I was loved by you.
Of engineering. Our next item concerns itself with the building of the Suez Canal. So let's clear the stage for Michael Benteen, the creator of Britain's leading scientist and engineer, the inventor of the ball toupee, the stringless violin for non-playing violinists, Captain Osric Gerhardt.
Good evening.
Good evening, Captain. Glad to have you with us again.
Glad to have me with you, yes.
Now, tell me, Captain, is it true that you built the Suez Canal?
Oh, yes, Mr. Milligan. Yes, oh, yes, I built it. It took me a long, long time, though. First, I had to get some permission from Cleopatra.
But the Cleopatra's been dead for 2,000 years.
I told you, it took me a long, long time.
Yes, I'm not doubting you, Captain, but for the benefit of the listeners, let's hear how you built the Suez Canal.
Ah, how you built the Suez Canal, yes.
No, you.
Oh, me? Oh, well, it all started many, many years ago in the Houses of Parliament where I was making my big speech. And so, gentlemen, you see that all our ships have to sail right round Africa to get to India.
But can we travel overland?
We've tried that, but it ruined the bottoms of the ships.
You mean you've been dragging ships over land?
Oh, yes. I was on board one recently, and as we were dragging it across the Sahara Desert, it fell to bits.
But wasn't that dangerous?
Of course it was, but we managed to escape.
How?
In a lifeboat.
Lifeboats?
Well, I mean, we couldn't swim.
Swim? But you were in the Sahara.
I know. Who ever heard of anyone trying to swim in the Sahara?
Touché. That's all very well, but has any honorable member got any ideas for a new route?
Don't worry about that.
I have.
You know that Africa and Asia are joined by a narrow strip of land?
Oh,
yes, Mr. Prime Minister.
Oh.
Now, it is my intention to cut a canal right across that strip of land.
Ooh. Cut Africa off from Asia?
Yes.
Ooh, but if you do that, Africa will float away.
Africa float away? I am silly man, of course. I never thought of that.
Oh, well, now, what are you going to do?
I'll nail it down with carpet tags.
Oh, you're cleverer than I am. Come to think of it. Anybody is.
Well, gentlemen, I shall call this canal the Suez. And Mr. Chancellor of the Exchequer,
yes. You
are going to pay for the Suez.
Suez.
All right, pray. Just Mr. Disraeli, get the lorry.
A few months later, Gerhardt arrived in Egypt, set up camp, and work began on the canal. Of course, there were certain obstacles to be overcome.
What do you want, Fitch Spike?
I sure like him, Mr. Farouk. I'm building a canal, and I'm afraid it's going to run right through your house.
What? Through me a fiver yucky boy. You think I'm going to run downstairs and open the front door every time a ship wants to go through?
You're caught.
Silly old thing, you don't have to do that now. You can leave the key under the mat.
Low light. Take the notice, Captain. Just turn a deaf ear.
Well, it so happens I do have a deaf ear.
Really?
I found it on the floor of a barber shop in Acton.
Excuse me, Captain.
Yes, Mr. De Lesseps?
One of the workmen just dug this out of the ground.
Let me see. Oh, great Scott. It's most valuable. It's an ancient Egyptian urn. Oh, and look, there's an old manuscript tucked into the neck.
What does it say, Captain?
Well, in ancient Egyptian hieroglyphics, it says, Lars live du akdra bins.
And what's that mean?
Please leave two extra pipes. Let's proceed to the work. We've very nearly finished. Where is my super speed benzene excavator? Largo?
Yes, sir, genius.
Bring me. I say, Largo, you're looking very, very young today. You never seem to get any older.
Well, Captain, you know what they say. A thing of beauty is a boy forever.
Yes. Well, get my super speed excavator ready, will you?
Yes.
Now, gentlemen, this new excavator of mine will move 30 tons of earth in exactly 1 minute.
That's impossible.
No, no, not. I'll prove it. I'll time it to you to the very, very exact second with my wristwatch. Ready? Go.
That's possibly the strangest sounding excavator I've ever heard.
Excavator? That was my wristwatch.
Captain, this telegram just arrived from Mr. Disraeli.
Well, let me see. What? Oh, no! Oh, this stuff is ruination! All my work ruined! I resign!
Why, Captain?
After all that digging, you know, I mean, do you know what they want to do with my beautiful canal?
What?
Fill it with water!
That was Max Gildrey, Holland's gift to British Radio. In return, we're sending Sandy McPherson. Revenge is sweet. The BBC has presented many radio scrapbooks of years gone by and innumerable recordings of old historic broadcasts. But what of the future? The Goons have decided to look forward some 40 years or so and present a glimpse of broadcasting in the year 1999.
This is the BBC Home Service. Here is the news, and this is Citizen 7638-J reading it. Conservative and Socialist MPs made farewell speeches at Southampton Docks today when Mr. Jack Fields, the last British Liberal, was deported in chains.
An announcement from the Silverstone Raceback states that Mr. Charles Moss, great-great-grandson of Mr. Sterling Moss, is hopeful of a British victory this afternoon, if only the BRM will start.
The BBC Debating Society, which was founded in 1952, over 40 years ago, met last night for its usual weekly debate. The subject under discussion was, should Ted Ray retire?
Last night, radio's top quizmaster, Stuart McGaiman, was warned for the 38,000th time about being rude on television by the BBC's new director general, Sir Gilbert Hardy.
So much for the news in 1999. But what of other programs? With transatlantic influence even stronger than it is now, will our programs in 40 years' time sound something like this?
This is the ACBBC, the American-controlled British Broadcasting Corporation.
We present that dynamic drama, breathtaking epic, that vital, heart-rending story, that soul-seeding saga of human emotion.
Mrs. Dale's daughter. About my husband, Jim. This morning at breakfast, I was covering my toast with a thick, creamy layer of sludge that vitamin spread with the extra rich golden flavor. When I looked up, I noticed Jim. I wasn't sure it was Jim. He looked so different.
And why did he look so different? Because Jim that morning had shaved with his new Bolo Heckenbacher hydrostatic electric razor. The razor with the bar lock, safety, precision, angle.
Yes, I hardly recognized him. His face was still covered with blood. But worse still, I noticed something that thrilled my veins with horror. He hadn't drunk his poofer milk.
You may laugh, ladies and gentlemen. You may not think that important, but let us bring you the case of a man who had never heard of poofer milk.
Yes, no, I have a spread dog. I was an office clerk, but I never got promotion because I was always a tall and listless young guy. Finally, I decided to see a doctor.
Hey, and you see that you're tired and listless during the day. You ever suffer from insomnia?
Oh, no, it's just that I cannot sleep.
What you need is poofer milk.
So every night I prepared a steaming hot cup of poofer milk. There was only one trouble.
And what was that?
I couldn't drink the filthy stuff.
And so Fred Bond got the sack and took a job as a billiard marker.
Yes, I always wanted to be a billiard marker. So now I'm quite happy.
Thinks to himself.
Thanks to poofer milk.
Well, you can see why I was worried. There was I sitting down to breakfast every morning with Jim and 14 advertising agents. For instance.
Dear?
Yes, Jim?
Could I have another slice of bread and butter?
Bread and butter? Come now, Mr. D. You mean Lurgy Loaf, the new wholemeal vitamin loaf. Eat Lurgy Loaf and you will never grow another leg. Yes, and what better to go with it than Crunch, the luminous, paint-resisting butter? The only butter that will take away the taste of that filthy Lurgy Loaf.
Lurgy Loaf? Why, I ain't for good mind to knock you down with this jar of Swole's old wire marmalade available in the 2-ton economy size with all grocers.
Why, how slight are you this length of chocolate spaghetti? 3 shillings a pound, just pop in boiling water for 5 minutes, and bingo! Your supper's ruined. Why, you Swole?
Dear?
Yes, Jim?
Could I have that slice of bread and butter now?
Of course, Jim.
It was you who shot them, wasn't it, dear?
Yes, Jim. I shot them with my Jones and Schlesinger 32 handy pocket-sized automatic double-shot action pistol. Also available in large economy sizes, that all...
Shut up!
What better to go with it than Zingo bullets? The only bullets...
Shut up!
Use Zingo bullets and you'll never...
Shut up!
I will not tag it up! No!
Thanks to poofer milk!
And now we present the Ray Hennington Quartet.
I'll be coming back to...
Bum, tickle, bum, 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 bum.
Boom. Why did my heart go boom, boom? Me and my heart go boom, boom, bitty boom, cause I found you. Boom. When you weren't here, it's boom, boom. I could see love in the bloom, boom, bitty boom, all around. Was it at 7 or 11:30 or cruising around the Pacific? I only know that I can't let you go. Your affection for me is terrific. Boom. When we're a bride and groom. Oh, won't my heart go boom, boom, bitty boom, cause I love you. Chevrolet Bacou.
Genesee Park, what can you do? Bum, 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 bum,
adventure of that extraordinary creation of Peter Sellers, Major Bloodnock, in the quest for the abominable snowman.
Yes, my name is Bloodnock, Major Bloodnock, late of the first native comforts. We were at Balaclava, you know, yes. I have a fine military record, Colonel Bogey on one side and Stars and Stripes on the other. At the time when the story starts, I had a nice little house on Clapham Common. One day, my Batman lad, Lord Milligan, rushed into my study in a state of great excitement.
Major Bloodnock! Major Dark! Major Bloodnock! Major Bloodnock! Major Dark! Major Bloodnock! Major Dark! Major Bloodnock! Major Bloodnock!
Yes, I was out. However, Abdul knew that when I wasn't home, he could always find me one of my old haunts, and sure enough, he did.
Ah, Major Bloodnock, the Lung of Rubertania, send a gunboat to raid.
Hello, Abdul. What is it?
Letter for you, sir.
Letter? Let's see.
Here, stop that visitor, ain't allowed to pass objects to the prisoners.
Yes, Bloodnock was in jail. The news that he'd been sentenced to 6 months hard made me very sad. I had hoped he'd get life. On his release, he was welcomed home by his faithful butler, Ellie.
Oh, blimey, you again? Come in, Major, sit down.
Thank you, Ellie, thank you. Ah, that's better. Now, I'll take my boots off, will you?
Yes, Major. That's one. And that's the other.
Right, now don't let me catch you wearing my boots again. Now, where's the letter you had for me?
Here you are, sir.
Well, then, what does it say here? Dear Major Bloodnock, we would like you to take charge of the new weather stations on Mount Everest. We realize that you have no meteorological experience, but in these troubled times, we believe that you are the ideal type of Englishman to be sent abroad. Yours sincerely, the Metropolitan Police. Oh, Mount Everest, where's that?
That's India.
Is it, dear?
Yes, dear.
Oh. Talking about India, let's have a look at the map. I do, you're right.
What's that?
There is a place called India. Forward!
A few months later, I found the Major and his team of incompetents in a little weather station on the slopes of Mount Everest.
Oh, now, let's check the instruments. How's the wind gauge working?
Perfectly, sir.
Is the barometer okay?
Yes, sir.
How's the weather cup?
Flipping cold, mate.
Now, Captain Johart.
Ah, yes?
Climb down to the base camp at the bottom of the mountain and see if they've got any supplies.
Right, sir.
Now, everybody got supplies down there?
Oh, I love them up. Thank you.
Well, did they have any supplies?
Yes.
We'll see if they've got any milk, will you?
Right, sir.
Any milk?
Yes.
Thank you. Well?
Yes.
Oh. Well, ask me if I can have any.
Right, sir.
Well, can we have any?
No.
Not me, sir. It's that blasted orchestra that keeps following me.
Please, Bloodnock! Please, Bloodnock!
Ellington, what is it? You look beige with fright.
The venom porters say there's a huge hairy monster that roams the camp at night.
Gentlemen, I can't keep the truth from you any longer. That is the abominable snowman.
The abominable snowman? But the Tibetans call him the Laku Magmag Chaldok Yala Maya Pupu Naku Bosko Belongu Zatsu Batsu.
And what does that mean? The abominable snowman.
Stop. The porter told me they've seen him.
Seen who?
The abominable snowman. He's 12 miles from here on the other side of the mountain, all right.
What? Splendid. Now, who'll go and capture him, eh? Well, Ellington, Seacomb, Milligan, Benteen. Oh, come on, all of you. It's only 12 miles away. Are you coming or aren't you? All right, you lousy yellow-livered cowards. I'll give myself. Give me my gun. 12 miles, eh? Goodbye, you cowards. He got away. Well, I'll get him tomorrow.
Got him, they did. They nailed the abominable snowman in a specially constructed box and flew it back to London. There, before a distinguished gathering of anthropologists, zoologists, and Mrs. Braddock, Blugnot opened the box.
Thank you, gentlemen, thank you. And now, gentlemen, comes my proudest moment. I shall open the box and show you the result of 3 years' research and hardship in the frozen Himalayas. The first of its species ever to be brought back alive. The abominable snowman. Now, and here, ladies and gentlemen, we have the...
What is it, Major?
The abominable snowman.
What happened?
He's melted.
Michael Benjamin and Spike Milligan, with the railings and quartet Max Gelder in the Stargate. The BBC Grand Orchestra was conducted by Stanley Black. The script was written by Spike Milligan and Mary Stevens and edited by Jimmy Grant. The program was produced by Dennis Van Harry Seacombe is now appearing in Jack and the Beanstalk at the Lyceum Theatre, Sheffield.